You are listening to the Loikamania Pop Culture Podcast. Is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover
price. How's it going, everyone? You're listening to Loikamania. Of course, this is Pat Loika. Today I have a very special guest. Probably one of the most well-renowned people on the internet, I think. One of the men who has over a million followers on Twitter, which still astounds me to this day. And his name, of course, is Ryan Penagos, but you know him probably as Agent M. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Hey, Pat. What's going on? Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. I've always wanted to have you on, and we've been talking about having you on for a while, but, you know, stuff just happens. It's been a really crazy year, especially for you guys, you know, over at Marvel. And, you know, you, of course, are in charge of pretty much all of the online operations, I believe, right, for Marvel.com?
I wouldn't go in charge of all the online operations because it's a pretty big gig. But, yeah, I'm the editorial director of Marvel.com. So I sort of oversee what we do on the website and a lot of our social media stuff and little bits and bops here and there along the way.
Excellent. And there's a lot. And actually, how long have you had the gig now?
For about I hit my 5-year anniversary at Marvel in October 2011. Started as associate editor, became editor, and then editorial director.
Cool. Well, it's really noticeable how much, you know, the website has changed since it first started, because I think like in the mid 2000s, you know, there have been a lot of complaints about the site. I mean, like, especially like the early 2000s, like around 2001, 2002, you know, there have always been issues with the site. People complain about it a lot, actually. And what's great about since you took over, you can really see a change. A lot of content was being added, lots of stuff. Like, I mean you guys have like full TV series on, for example. You even got the some of the more obscure stuff, like the Spider-Man Unlimited cartoon and the Japanese Spider-Man show.
Japanese Spider-Man is the best.
Oh, I know, man. The Kaiju and Spider-Man, you can't go wrong with that.
No.
Yeah. So now, was this something that you kind of spearheaded, or was this one of those instances where, hey, we have all this video here, why not just put it up? Or...
When I came on, it was 2006, and I was brought in because Marvel wanted an editorial presence on Marvel.com. They wanted to make Marvel.com a destination. So, you know, some of the things I wanted to do were, you know, actual content and brought in freelancers and did a lot more original stuff and interviews and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And then I think it was a couple months into when I was there, it was around the time, I think it was the first New York Comic Con, February 2007. That seems about right in my head. Mm-hmm. Where we wanted to start video stuff. So we talked about getting a camera and we did some video with Stephen King and around the announcement of the Dark Tower stuff and, you know, really sort of figuring out how to do video stuff. And then as that went on, we went into Marvel's library of, you know, what was available to stream. And that stuff really was coming together, you know, by like 2008, 2009. And that's efforts from across the company. That's, you know, that's just us being able to tap Marvel's extensive library and even, you know, how it was, things sort of came back to Marvel's property, you know, light rights for different things are, it's crazy. You know, one company may have rights to, a TV show or a movie, and the company who actually, quote unquote, you would think owns it, doesn't. So, you know, it worked out in weird ways. And so we were able to start building the library on Marvel.com with, all the different shows.
Excellent. Now, I think I jumped a little too far ahead, but, we'll kind of go back to the beginning a bit. One of the questions I always ask people at the beginning of every show is what exactly got them into comics? So,
answer that question. Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, you know, I've been into comics since I was, you know, a little kid. It was, I think, it wasn't, you know, I'm a little bit younger than Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and older than the X-Men and Spider-Man cartoons being what got me into comics. So it was just, I don't really know exactly what got me into comics. It just sort of happened, and, you know, it was probably flashy, you know, Wolverine's costume or something cool, the art and different things back in the, like, the mid late 80s. It's just one of those things that happened. I don't have one inciting moment or memory about getting into comics.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Now getting into the industry though, I mean, I believe you started through Wizard.
Yep. Yeah. I started as a freelancer for Toy Fair magazine, which was a sister publication of Wizard magazine. I was out of college. I was finishing up college, and I applied for an assistant editor job at Toy Fair magazine, and it got filled. But the guy who got the job, Justin Acklin, who's now at Hasbro or at Hunter PR doing really cool stuff. But back then he got hired and he said, "Hey, why don't you write for me? I need some freelancers now in this new job," which was fortuitous and completely crazy. That's like a one in a million chance, because, you know, I was nobody and he was sort of coming up, and just the fact that he took that initiative to give me that call and give me the chance, which was terrific. So I did freelance for Toy Fair, writing about military toys and market stuff and you know, all kinds of things that I didn't really have much knowledge about, but, you know, you learn as you go. So I did the freelance, and then I was called to come in for an interview. They said, I guess they got my name and said, "Why don't you come and interview for a research assistant position?" And this was 2003, and Wizard was still pretty good at that point.
Yeah,
you know, like I read it regularly regardless. And so I went up and I was super duper nervous, and I went up and I wore my Venom tie and I was incredibly nervous, and I bombed the interview, and it was really bad. But I kept doing freelance for Toy Fair, and for some reason, and I still need to ask someone why they called me back for another interview, but they did, and this was for a price guide assistant editor position for sort of the price guide assistant would work for Toy Fair, Inquest, and Wizard at that time. And I went up there, and this time I was more confident, I was ready to go, and I said, "You know what? I'm going to nail this." And I did. And shortly thereafter got the job, and then moved over to Price Guide Editor within a month after that.
Excellent. And of course, from there, was that the only position you held from that point, or what was it that spurred you into going to Marvel later on?
Sure. I think it took me a month to get promoted from Price Guide Assistant to all the magazines into the position of Wizard's Price Guide Editor. So I did that, and then really in that first year and change sort of took that position and worked around. And then the next year I built up a lot of what we did, reached out to a lot of retailers and tried a lot of different things and, you know, changed the way the section went and started to reach out and grab more parts of the magazine, doing, you know, stuff with video games and the internet and whatnot. And then at the beginning of my third year there, I got a promotion to associate editor. So I was still doing the Price Guide, but I was overseeing like the indie comic stuff, the Secret Stash, and I was overseeing video games and a bunch of different things. But I also took on the mantle of the Marvel contact. And at that point, there were different employees who had different jobs at Wizard. And one of the jobs could be a contact to a major company. So there was a Marvel contact, there was a DC contact, a Dark Horse contact, et cetera, et cetera. So for my part, I was the Marvel contact, which meant I would talk with someone at Marvel pretty much on a daily basis to get any news or any information, sort of figure out what coverage should go into the magazine, what could go online, ways to promote and work with the company and break news and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I was first working with John Doakes, and then it was the contact on the Marvel side was changed to Jim McCann. And Jim and I started working very closely together and just became really good friends and chatted. And every once in a while I would get an angry call from Jim, but you know, I mean, he was doing his job. It was fine. But I was visiting and I was actually telling the story to this person today. I was visiting Marvel, in the summer. And what we used to do is I would go visit Marvel and go to the different editorial offices and talk to the editors and talk to different people at the company and say, you know, take notes and see what they have planned and what they're excited about and look at some scripts and see some art. And there was a really great relationship between Marvel and Wizard at the time. And so I was walking around and I had on like a band t-shirt and some camouflage shorts. And I was just walking down the hall. And then, John Doakes, the vice president of digital stuff at the time, he ran the digital division. He sort of said, "Hey Ryan, why don't you come into this office for a second? Let's sit down for a second," and, you know, just chit chatting. And I'd known John for a couple of years at that point. So it was fine. But it sort of went from a casual talk into an impromptu interview, and he sort of caught me off guard, but at the same time I just went with it and turned into an interview. And then he brought in another person, and you know, within a couple of weeks they had taken me from Wizard to do editorial for Marvel.
That's awesome, man. Actually, you mentioned John Doakes. John Doakes is one of those guys who I always seem to remember as far as Marvel's concerned, because I remember like the first couple of years I've gone to the San Diego Comic-Con. He was the guy who was basically doing the giveaway stuff. Like even back in like 97 and 98, he was doing that. So,
yeah.
He's been around for a while.
Well, the thing is, John was at Marvel. He was with, you know, a lot of the folks. There were a lot of guys at Marvel in the mid and late 90s who left when – you know, things got really bad, the bankruptcy and layoffs and changes and whatnot. What happened, you know, pre-millennium and right around the millennium. And then, you know, Joe Quesada came to do Marvel Knights and Bill Gemmis and all the different changes in Marvel, you know, everything turned around. So a lot of the guys who were really good at Marvel in the late 90s kind of started coming back. So now, you know, like John Doakes, he's back. He's been back for, you know, a bunch of years now. My boss, John Cirilli, he used to run Marvel.com in the 90s. I mean, he's back now. Mike Pesciullo, who's now, you know, a big muckety-muck doing all kinds of cool stuff for Marvel. I mean, Dan Buckley, who's our president, it's really awesome to see these guys able to come back and do fun stuff again.
Cool, man. I've always been curious as far as, you know, what you guys do at Marvel.com. Like, obviously you guys obviously hire freelancers to do some of the write-ups, like, you know, like some of the psych profile things that you guys post, for example, for characters. And like, what do you guys like have, like, you know, obviously you have meetings, but how does someone, you know, get published and, you know, doing stuff for the website? I mean, not for the comics itself, but just, you know, to submit like articles, that sort of thing.
Sure. I mean, it can happen in a bunch of different ways. I think you're talking about the psych ward articles, and those are psych profiles and sort of interviews done by by Tim Stevens, who's he's like a trained psychologist. He has his degree, but he's getting another degree. So he's a legit. He can actually psychoanalyze you. Like when he does this, it's no joke. This is his trade. Mm-hmm. What he does for us is sort of take that and spin it a little bit. So he writes up the whole thing and he does, you know, half of it in the character's voice and half of it as his own. But I mean, he has a great handle on these characters and on their psychiatric problems or things that are going on. So it's really cool what he does. I think he knew Ben Morse, who's my associate editor. They had known each other for years. And it just, you know, it only worked out because Tim has this very, very cool skill set. I have, for a little while, I had Mark Strom writing for me, and he was a former intern, and now he's my assistant editor. I have, you know, a guy, Blake Garris, who he does a lot of celebrity interviews for me, like, you know, talks to celebrities about their love for Marvel. So he does a lot of that stuff. I don't even know how I got Blake. He's been writing for me for like 2 years now, and it's just one of those things. I think Chris Arant writes for us, and I think he might have been just a cold call, just, you know, said, hey, guys, I would like to write for you. And we heard some, you know, we looked at some of his references and saw some of his writing and started working with him. And, you know, I get a bunch of people all the time who are like, I want to write for Marvel.com. Actually, that reminds me, I have one in my inbox from a dude who writes about video games who wants to do more for me. And the thing is, it's like we have a large stable of guys right now, and we almost have too much that we can do and not enough time for a small crew to do it. But there's ways to break in. It's you know, be polite, be professional, be good, be hardworking. And, you know, as a freelancer, you got to hit your deadlines. You got to be honest. You got to be communicative. You know, all that stuff that you probably hear all the time.
Of course. You seem to have like the coolest job in the world because, you know, one minute you were, you know, you're of course doing the live blog thing, you know, for upcoming comics, like, you know, like you did one for the Scarlet Spider book today, and it looks like I think it's next week you guys have a big one for the the big architect related event, and then the next you're posting pictures of, you know, like some celebrity or some band visited the Marvel office. It's just like, it seems to be like the coolest thing in the world to be doing the stuff you do.
I can't complain. Yeah, it's a good gig if you can get it.
Yeah, man. I think that's kind of like a dream job, you know. Like as someone like me who's been into comics for a long time, it's like, man, how cool must it be to work at Marvel? And then you see the stuff you post. I'm like, see, look at that. Oh man, yeah. And you know, like, as far as, you know, what you do, I mean, like let's kind of go through like, you know, what a typical day is for you, like when you start up at Marvel, you know, like today you said you have a long day today, like. Was it, I mean, aside from, of course, the live blog event that you guys did for Scarlet Spider with Chris Yost and Ryan Stegman, did you guys have any, like, how does it typically go?
You know, it's at this point in my career right now, it's a lot of communication. It's a lot of email. It's a lot of meetings. It's a lot of phone calls. It's a lot of chatting with other people in other parts of the company because I'm looking at a lot of what we do. I mean, I was looking at animation stuff at one point today. I had some movie things I had to, you know, hash out with some people at one point. There's a lot of comic book stuff that we're doing right now. I worked on some toy stuff. So there's a lot of communication that goes on in a day, and it's not glamorous, but that's just the reality of my day. But on the other side, I did, we put up a story about Thor bottle openers that Diamond Select Toys is putting out. And I had met with Zach Oat from Diamond Select last week, and he told me about the bottle openers and some other toys. And so we're gearing up to do more with Diamond Select. So I was starting that conversation with, I was starting that coverage with them. And I don't really get to do a lot of the editorial stuff as much as I used to. So it was good to sort of do some Photoshop and do some writing and do some editing and put that all together. And then I'm planning a lot of the stuff that we're doing for what you had mentioned, the It's Coming live event. And I won't say anything more about that, but stay tuned to Marvel.com this week in the next couple of days, and you'll see lots and lots and lots about it. Although when does this podcast go up?
This is going to go up actually on Wednesday.
All right. So at the point that the people here listen to this podcast, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and, I'm pretty excited about that, actually.
Yeah, no, it's super cool, and yeah. I won't say anything more. Just know that it's coming.
And aside from that, actually, you and Ben and on occasion Strami, you guys do a podcast together called The Week in Marvel, and I'm really enjoying it so far. you know, and of course, and you guys have also had another podcast going, that Jeff Sutter, you know, the Mighty Marvel podcast, is, you know, obviously, the podcasting thing has been going on for a while now. Like, what made you guys decide to do a second podcast in addition to what Jeff was doing?
Well, you know, I mean, I think Jeff does an amazing job with Mighty Marvel podcast. He does some really cool behind the scenes stuff, and they talk about what's upcoming, and he sort of hits all these different areas, and I think it's great, but they don't get to put it on too much. Jeff is like incredibly busy. He's senior art director.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like the podcast is sort of a labor of love and a passion project. And unfortunately, I don't know that there's enough time to get everything done. So that's like the interview podcast. Mm-hmm. And I had been kicking around in my brain ways to do more podcasting. I'd been on some podcasts before, and I was like, it's kind of fun. I can talk a lot if need be, and we have a lot of stuff going on with Marvel. And with the podcast area really just was sort of untapped for us at this point. So I said, we were at New York Comic Con. Someone at our Marvel Digital panel said, I would love to have a Marvel podcast that covers the news that's going on. And I was like, yes, that's exactly what I've been thinking about. And now I know someone else out there wants it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, all right, well, I can do that. I could bring the news and I can talk about all the comics that are coming out and give some perspective and yada, yada, yada. So I came up with, you know, This Week in Marvel, sort of just very basic, very easy, but it tells you what it is right there. It seems to be doing pretty well. We've done 5 episodes at this point. And I think the comments that I hear the most are, you need more interviews in your podcast. And I love interview podcasts and, you know, being on them and knowing that people do them. And it's like, but that's not what it is. I'm trying to figure out a way to bring interviews into it without making it run super long, and also not taking, you know, I don't want to take anything away from the previews and the news, which is what this is, what the podcast is all about.
Yeah, and I mean, there is, you know, I mean, and of course, there are plenty of interview podcasts that go on out there. I mean, it would be kind of a shame to have like a guest on and just get them for like what, 10 minutes or something, and that would kind of be a waste of, you know, waste of everyone's time, because you would want to pick their brain and you would want to have like a longer conversation when you interview someone. So I think what you guys are doing so far, I think it's pretty great. I enjoyed. I like hearing it from direct from you guys what's coming out, because now I remember, oh, okay, that book comes out this week. And sometimes, you know, you miss it, you know, with your pull list or whatever app, you know, I use a pull list app. Sometimes they miss books. And then I would hear it there. I'm like, oh, see, that comes out. You guys have been doing good. So I
thank you.
So I'm glad you guys have some kind of a weekly podcasting presence, because that always says a lot. You know, that's a good thing for you guys and for the company itself. Because
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's appreciated. Another thing I enjoy, of course, is your Twitter presence.
Yes.
You guys have do such a good job with the social media with Marvel. I mean, I think I don't know who exactly. I don't know if it's you or Janet that runs the actual Marvel, the Marvel Twitter. But you guys are so good at getting all the word out there, and it gets a lot of attention. It gets more people to check out stuff, and of course, when you guys post art previews or like video clips or whatever, it's always it's always good.
Yeah, it's a big group effort. I started it, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, whatever it was at this point. Started the Marvel one, and, you know, sort of my role changes. So I don't get to do as much of the nitty-gritty with it. But, you know, with Jana, who does some good work, and Ben Morse, and Mark Strom, we all are tapped into the Marvel feed, and you know, everybody, I want to make sure everybody, when they, before they start using it, they all have to, you know the tone and what to say and what not to say, and you know that you are speaking for Marvel, so it's very important to do it, you know, properly. So they all do it really well, and every once in a while, you know, when I know no one else is at their machines, I can sort of answer some questions from Marvel and, you know, retweet and do some stuff like that. But now there's so many cooks in the kitchen, we're just trying to make sure nobody's stepping on each other's toes and doing it in a fun way.
Yeah. And of course, it's kind of a thankless job, especially handling stuff like Facebook. Because I've seen the Marvel Facebook, and I've seen some other people just trolling you guys, and I'm just like, oh my god, you guys have some people who are just, you know, I mean, basically, you know, the whole online thing and the way people act towards people is just ridiculous. And Marvel gets a lot of it because, you know, I mean, there are a lot of really passionate fans. And I'm always curious how you guys take, you know some of the replies you get or even, I mean, on Twitter, like there are some, like, they're like retailers who are like disgruntled or just people are just generally pissed off. And somehow you guys handle yourselves really well. You either ignore it or at least you give them a very polite reply. And like you guys are better at this than I am, because I would probably, I don't know, I would give them all kinds of crap, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's tough. It's people are very passionate about this stuff. These are the characters that they've grown up reading and seeing and enjoying. It's difficult to say for sure, you know, if you're doing too much or not enough, you know, contact with the fans out there. Me personally, I don't like Facebook. I don't use it too much. Mm-hmm. For the Marvel stuff, you know, I use it when I can, but we monitor, you know, the replies and the comments, but it gets to be so much and so crazy so that you can't hit everything. Mm-hmm. I think we do a fair job, and the people who are saying jerky things, a lot of times other people are like, hey, stop being a jerk. You know, it's like the other fans sort of do, you know, kind of tackle them about these things, and that's fine. But I don't think anyone should be, you know, if a retailer is unhappy, they should damn well be able to speak their mind and tweet to us, and we're going to read it, and we're going to talk to other people in the company, and, you know, it gets seen. It's, you know, it's, you're not talking to a faceless brand.
Okay, that's always good to hear. But, you know, sometimes you guys get a lot of heat, and I think in a very unfair way. But like I said, you guys handle yourselves really well, so I applaud you guys for that.
Thank you.
You are far better than I am. at this point, though, let's kind of talk about you. One of the reasons why I actually, you know, started following you, just, you know, aside from, of course, being that you're from Marvel, we happen to share a lot of the same interests. You know, like, you know, of course, there's comics, but, you know, there are certain characters that we both gravitate towards, like, for example, Cable and Thanos, and then the whole Infinity Gauntlet thing. And then,
you mean the greatest characters ever?
Yeah, I know. I was always curious. So, you know, what type of stuff are you really into as far as, you know, as far as comics go? Like, what are you currently reading? You know, what's setting your world on fire?
Secret Avengers. Warren Ellis' Secret Avengers is ridiculous. That's really good. What else? Fantastic Four 600 was insane.
Again, that book was the subject of so much debate when it came out. I'm like, dude, it's $8 for like 3 comics worth of stuff. What's wrong with that?
There's value in there. You may not want to pay $8 for that at that one point, but you're getting such a thick book, and it's just—it's jam packed. It's so good. That's terrific. Daredevil remains, you know, incredible. Uh-huh. Every issue. Emma Rios is coming on in the future, and she's so good. What else? I'm trying to think of what I read. You know, like, I read every book that we put out. Every book in the stack, I read. And it's just like constant comics, go.
I always envy you when you post your picture of, like, you know, your stack of comp trades. I'm like, wow, how do I get
I try
that?
Not to post that too often because it's, you know, but there's sometimes when I get a stack and I'm like, oh my goodness, that's a lot of comics. I actually probably should have posted it last week because I think I got 3 volumes of Essentials, the last Grant Morrison New X-Men book, another trade or two, plus, you know, like, you know, 20 comics, and it's just this gigantic stack, and it's, you know, it's awesome.
Oh, I know. It honestly, it kills me sometimes when new books come out, because especially and you know, I don't know, I think it's more of me really, but, you know, the fact that, you know, when a book comes out, you know, when the single issue comes out, I pick it up. Then they put that hardcover out. I buy it because I love the hardcovers. And then later on, they come up with an even better version, and then I buy it anyway. It just keeps every time there's a new format, I always pick it up, and I can't help it because I love that stuff. I'm seeing that stuff on my shelf.
That's like, well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, so that's why I'm very, very envious. I'm like, oh man, they get comp stacks. How do you get that?
Yeah, and you know, not everybody gets them. Everybody at Marvel, sort of, if you get a stack, you may. There's like three tiers of stacks, I guess, essentially. Like Ben Morse, who is my associate editor, he gets Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. And I get Marvel Comics and Marvel Collections. Mm-hmm. And my boss gets Marvel Comics, Marvel Collections, and even some DC books. Oh, wow. And I guess there's four levels because some people also get hardcovers. Mm-hmm. But those are very rare. I don't know who gets the hardcovers.
Probably Dan Buckley.
I would hope Dan gets the hardcovers.
Oh man, yeah, Dan gets everything. I'm addicted to the omnibus, you know, format. Those are fantastic.
I love them. It's just that they're so hard to read, you know, like on the go, mm-hmm. or in, you know, places where I usually read comics. They're just so big. So I have, you know, I have like a bunch of them on the shelves, but I don't take them out too often. And then we'll put out, you know, different versions of a lot of those collections. So, I mean, I think it's good because there's a version for everyone and, you know, whoever wants to read it in different ways.
Well, funny you mentioned, like, you know, bringing it around. Like, a true story, one of my friends, he had, I think, the Amazing Spider-Man Omnibus and the Silver Surfer Omnibus in his backpack, and some guy tried to snatch it from him while he was getting on the train, and he literally, like, whipped the guy with the backpack and knocked him out. Those things can be very useful. They can be very good weapons, actually.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, besides the collections, like, you get to do a lot of traveling as well. And was that something you expected you'd be doing while you were, you know, while you have this gig?
I mean, yeah, a little, you know, I guess it was sort of like, I think in 2006, we weren't really doing a ton of convention stuff, but, you know, San Diego Comic-Con was like, yeah, we're going to do that. You'll go to that. And it's gotten more and more over the years. And there's more traveling than I would have anticipated, but I like traveling. I like going and seeing friends in different places and, you know, going to, you know, cool events and especially our conventions. I love seeing the fans and doing panels and running around like a crazy person and interviewing people and, you know, doing all the coverage that we do. It's super duper fun.
Yeah, it's really amazing, you know, how you guys handle the convention coverage, actually. You know, just the fact that you guys are doing live video, live streaming, actually, you do interviews. And I remember it's amazing to interact with you guys. Like, say, you were talking at a convention in Chicago, like during C2E2, actually, when you had Brian Bendis on. And I tweeted a question to you guys. And just hearing the response, like, right there, right in front of you, was just insane.
It's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I know. It's a really cool way to kind of bring the convention to people who can't go, and I always thought that was really cool. I wish more people did that because, you know, it's exciting. It's fun to people watch too while you guys are like talking, because there's these people in the background. You know, next thing you know, some guy dressed up as a Juggernaut walks behind you, and you're just like, whoa, what's that?
Yeah,
yeah, so, yeah. I thought that's probably one of the best things you guys have added to the site, and you guys do. I think this year you did four shows that had that. I mean, you guys did San Diego. Obviously, you did New York C2E2, and I think Fan Expo in Canada, you did that as well. So,
yep.
Do you guys have any – I know you're not really responsible for the convention stuff, but, you know, has there been any talks of, like, expanding, you know, a Marvel booth presence, like, beyond those shows?
I don't know. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Probably not. But again, I can't speak for those departments. It's just there's a lot of shows as it is. And, you know, you look at New York and San Diego take an incredible amount of coordination, amount of planning, and amount of money to put on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just if you're putting on this thing for, you know, for fans and for awareness and all this stuff, but there's no real return on investment there. So it's a tricky proposition, mm-hmm. From a business point, but like we do San Diego, New York, C2E2, WonderCon, Fan Expo Canada, that's five shows over the course of a year. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. And I don't think that it's hard to say that even the industry can handle more big shows. Mm-hmm. It's just there's so much traveling. And, you know, I think actually next year we luck out because C2E2 and WonderCon are a little bit more spread out mm-hmm. than they were last year. For us, it takes a lot of time and money and people to do a whole show. So we've got to make sure that there's enough people there. It's definitely possible, but nothing that I know of right now.
Okay, well, that's cool. You mentioned WonderCon. Actually, next year is going to be a very interesting time with WonderCon because of the different location that it's going to be in.
Yeah, the Anaheim stuff. I think yeah. I'm super excited, and I was talking to my wife about this the other day. It's like, hey, you should come to WonderCon, and then we can stay for an extra day or two and go to Disneyland. And I went to D23, the Disney Fan Expo, in July or August or whenever that was, and that was a lot of fun, and it was cool because there's the whole convention aspect, but then you can just, you know, putt over and go right to Disneyland, which, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the park, so mm-hmm. I'm psyched.
And, and before we get into some listener questions, I've always been curious. You have actually done, aside from, of course, the Marvel.com stuff, you've actually written comics yourself.
Well, I wrote one. It was like a 3 or 4 page story. I wrote one little holiday thing, but I got the artist Wando, who is a personal, he's a friend of mine. I've known him for a long time and was able to get him to draw it. And Steve Wacker edited it. And that is a really cool thing to have done. I don't think I'll be writing any more comics. Honestly, I don't really want to write comics. I like the part of the industry that I'm in and what I do. Mm-hmm. I hear some people say, well, anyone who's involved in comics just wants to write comics. And I don't necessarily think that's true. I think, that was a cool thing for me to do, but that's not an itch that I want to scratch. I'm not really a guy who likes doing fiction and that sort of creative writing. I like being on this side and sort of the journalism/entertainment, whatever you call it, part that I do.
Yeah, I've always, there are a lot of people who actually do eventually end up doing writing. I mean, a lot of editors, leave positions to do writing. And then, of course, where you're in right now, I mean, if you were to do any freelance writing work of that kind, it would probably be the biggest headache ever because you already have all this stuff going on to begin with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do some freelance stuff on my own, just writing for, mm-hmm. Some stuff for some extra cash. But it's not anything that is anyway connected to, comics, what I do now,
Yeah. And, actually you mentioned journalism. I've always been curious. I mean, as someone who kind of runs, some articles on the website, like what do you think of journalism in the comics biz as it stands right now? now that Wizard, Wizard kind of went away. And, well, they did some good stuff even. A lot of people kind of crap on Wizard, but they, every now and then they would put something out that was really good.
Yeah,
and what do you think of the current state of now? Because right now, anyone who has a blog or has a website, can pretty much kind of call themselves that. And I kind of wish there was a standard, because there are certain gossip sites that exist out there, and a lot of stuff gets misreported. Like there's this whole thing, for example, about Joe Madureira apparently getting dropped off of Amazing Spider-Man, which is of course not true because we know he was coming back for another arc. What's your opinion of the state of that particular aspect of the business?
Well, I mean, it's cool to have a great community, but I went to school for journalism. Mm-hmm. I keep an AP style book mm-hmm. at my right hand every day. Mm-hmm. I look at it all the time. And I wish I had a copy editor mm-hmm. On my staff to correct some of the mistakes, because I'm better as a content editor mm-hmm. than I am as a copy editor. But I think, editorial background, having some sort of editorial slant to what you're doing, having some oversight, having some journalistic ethics if you want to be a journalist, if you want to call yourself a journalist, You know, there's certain ethics, and, you know, just saying that, oh, I'm going to tell it like it is, quote unquote, if that's what you want to do, doesn't necessarily make you a journalist. You know, reporting on something you saw on another site that was seen on another site that was seen on Twitter that was seen on another site doesn't make you a journalist. It's, I don't know, it's weird. It's a funky situation. And I think, you know, journalism, you know, some of it is, if you're looking at it from a news standpoint, is reporting on news. Now, news doesn't necessarily break in comics unless it's broken, unless it's given by a company like Marvel or DC or another company. They say, this is what's happening, because it's imperative for the companies to protect their interests and make sure that things aren't spoiled, that things aren't broken and released and you know, put out there against the sort of plans that are put in place. So there's really, you know, there's not a lot of journalism. There's not a lot of room for journalism in my opinion. I mean, there are people who are doing really cool, really good work as far as news, really good writers like Kyle Fahey at CBR. Yes. I mean, Kyle's a personal friend. I've known him for a long time. So it's hard for me to say anything otherwise, but like he does what he does because he's really good at it, and I think he does it really well. But he's on a different level than I think some of the other people out there. Just because someone's running a site doesn't necessarily mean that they are a credible source or that they have any, you know... I get a little antsy about this just because it's...
No, man, I'm with you there, man. I like way, way early in the run of the podcast, I actually had a big rant about comics journalism. And, you know, I have a friend who writes for Newsarama who is actually trained, and he's trained the same way you are. And, you know, we kind of talked about it for a bit, and I thought it's a very interesting subject, and, you know, maybe something we'll revisit later on. Go on.
Yeah, you know, I worked at Wizard. It's really not like the bastion of journalistic integrity. It's not a place where, you know, we were really going out and sniffing out stories. At Wizard, it was like I was talking to Marvel and figuring out what the news was, you know. So it's not like I'm saying that from my experience there. It's just there's a different – I don't think comics necessarily has a lot of – journalism in it. It has a lot of really cool entertainment reporting and cool, you know, there's writing about comics that can be really good and really well done and, you know, different levels for it depending on what your interest case may be. But I don't, you know, unless someone is going around, you know, looking for papers at a company's, you know, inside a company and then, you know, unleashing that stuff onto the internet and pretending that's news, like everything is sort of given to the reporters. And then it's what they do with it. And that separates, you know, A from B. And the really good writers can do really cool things. And the people who are great interviewers can really elevate what their sites and what their product is.
Awesome. At this point of the show, it's time to get into, because we're before we get too long, it's time to get into some listener questions because there's quite a bit. let me start with a batch I got through Facebook. Oh.
Hello?
Yeah, you okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I was moving the microphone out of the way.
Okay, we'll start with some questions that came from Facebook. Mark Lombardi asks, if you could eat a taco made from any Marvel character, who would you choose?
Ooh, a delicious Marvel character taco. Well, we have two characters from the old What the comic book series called Milk and Cookies. I could have some fun dessert tacos with them. What was the dude? I'm trying to think of the dude. He has like a wild boar head.
Razorback.
Razorback, thank you. Razorback. He would probably make some really good tacos. You get some wild boar and maybe do a little al pastor with him. Delicious.
Next question is from Brian Lipsitz. Deadpool versus an army of living tacos. Who wins?
Deadpool, because he would eat them. He would never stop. He would eat them until they were gone. Eventually, he would win. Even if he, you know, his stomach exploded, it would heal itself, and then he would keep eating. You can't stop Deadpool.
Next is from Gabe Bustamante. Now, everyone's going with the taco thing.
Tacos are awesome. I had two tacos for lunch today.
Gabe Bustamante asks, soft or hard shell tacos?
Oh, come on. Soft shell all the way. I hope people who, think of tacos don't think of, like, Taco Bell tacos. They have to think of Taqueria tacos or, more authentic tacos, because if you're having, if your concept of a taco is just Taco Bell, you're doing a disservice to the tacos, my friends.
You're doing it wrong.
And that's not to say anything against Taco Bell. There's, every once in a while I have a wild craving for one of their weird chalupas, and it's crunchy and it's soft at the same time, and it's got weird stuff in it, but it makes me happy.
And next is from Ryan King, and he's asking basically if we're going to see any Disney-related projects, like either Marvel doing Disney comics or Disney making some Marvel stuff.
Well, let's see. There was the Prep and Landing backup story that was in a couple books recently, and Prep and Landing is a Disney property. Mm-hmm. And they're sort of these Christmas elves, and they were interacting with some Marvel stuff, and it was a fun story. Mm-hmm. Excuse me one second. There was that. We had some Captain America variant covers, and there were some Disney artists in there. I think those were I Am Captain America.
Oh, those are amazing. Those are great.
Yeah, I believe there was a Pixar artist in there, a Disney artist in there. What else? I mean, there's Muppet books coming out. There's I think we're printing Mark Waid's Incredibles now.
Awesome.
There's a variety of stuff. The potential is there. It's not going to be shoehorned into it. It's going to be like, okay, what makes sense? What's cool? What can we do that bridges those gaps? And more and more, I assume there will be more, but there's nothing, I can't say,
Of course.
Scrooge McDuck is going to take over as Iron Man, and he's just going to be another crotchety old rich man in Iron Man armor, which I would love, because I have a copy of The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck mm-hmm. sitting on the couch next to me because I was slipping through it for something, and it's so good. Have you ever read it?
No, I have not. I've always wanted to get it, but the credibility is being questioned now.
As big of a fan of comics that you are, you need to read The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck. Boom put out two really nice hardcovers. You can go on Amazon and find the soft covers that came out a bunch of years ago, but it's hands down one of my favorite comics of all time.
I will look for that.
Cool.
I've always had an interest. Was that by Carl Barks or was it?
It's Don Rosa, based off of original stories by Carl Barks, and really sort of elaborated on everything he did. So if you picture it like as if sort of like Brian Michael Bendis and Steve McNiven doing stories inside the first, inside various stories that Stanley and Jack Kirby did of the Fantastic Four. Like, the best doing the best of the best era. It's just fantastic comics.
Okay, I will definitely look for that. The next question I have is from a mutual friend, Ron Richards of iFanboy, and he asks, if MODOK had to choose between dumplings or Zipolis, which would he choose?
All right. So if MODOK had to choose between dumplings or Zeppelis, Zeppelis, for those of you who aren't familiar with crazy Italian Ron Richards and his food stuff, Zeppelis are basically little fried balls of dough, like deep fried, then put in a bag with powdered sugar, and then you shake the bag up like a paper bag, and you shake the bag up, and then so they're covered in powdered sugar, and they're hot, and they're crispy on the outside and soft on the inside, and they burn you. But they're so delicious. You get them at a lot. I grew up on Long Island, same as Ron, and we would have a lot of, church and school fairs and different stuff, on the island. And you would go and you'd know that they were selling Zeppelis. And or if you're in New York, you can go to San Gennaro Festival or whatever, Italian festivals, and you can always find Zeppelis. Anyway, MODOK, he would like dumplings.
Okay.
Yeah, without a doubt. He's just more of a dumpling guy. Mm-hmm. I think Zeppelis would be too hard for him to eat because he's got those, you know, his arms are so short that he would have, yeah, and then he would get the powder. My wife is motioning to me from across the room. She's like, he would get the powder on him. He would totally get the powder all over his face chest. And I assume he can use chopsticks and he can pick up the dumplings or he can use the special brain powers, but still, yeah, dumplings all the way.
Okay. Next up is Allie from My Family, okay, at Wonder Allie, and she asks, when are we getting Muppet Avengers? And with a hashtag, this has to happen.
I would love it. I don't know that, I don't think there are any plans right now, but we do have a big Avengers movie coming out next year, so anything is possible, but nothing to speak of. I wish.
Who would be the Captain America of the Muppets?
Who would be the cat? Well, you know, there was that did you see that Sam Eagle poster as Captain America? That pretty much nailed it. I mean, he is America.
He would be perfect, actually. Next question is from artist Kevin Mellon, and he asks, which of Ryan Stegman's nipples is your favorite to tweak? There's three of them, so I understand if this is a toughie.
Yeah, I'd have to definitely go with the left one. I mean, he's got immaculate nipples, so you really want to canvas all of them, but yeah, you got to go with the left one. They're all glorious though.
And the last question I have is from Ryan Stegman. Of course, he was in agreement with Kevin about the question. He also asks if you can be his BFF.
Yeah, I would. I've actually I've hung out with Ryan at a couple conventions this year, and we had good times, and I'm trying to convince him and his wife and kid to move up to New York, because that would be super cool. We'd be the best of friends. We'd go on picnics together and hold hands and go to the Met and just look at art and not even talk. We wouldn't even have to talk to each other. It would just be looking at art and maybe looking at each other once in a while. It would be really sweet.
Ryan, I mean, I brought this up before when I had him on the show, but Ryan has the greatest Twitter avatar ever. Just that face he's making there, that is, it's amazing.
It's perfect. It's just perfect.
Yeah. I was disappointed actually at New York Comic Con this year because I was looking to meet him and get a fan of a sketch from him, but I could not find him at all at Artist Alley this year. It was insane.
Yeah. I mean, I think I saw him for like 10 minutes and he came on to our live show, mm-hmm. and he was, you know, he was dry and funny and totally Stegman. It was a good time.
Yeah, he's great. He was fun to have on the show, and dude really loves his Spawn too.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. So okay, well, that's it for now. And before we close out, of course, I want to get your, you know, where can people find you online? Of course, your online presence at Twitter.
Sure. Uh-huh. They can find me on Twitter at @agent_M. That's the best place to find me. I'm also also on Google Plus. Google Plus doesn't have a cool, easy sort of like URL that you can give anyone. It's unfortunate. But I'm there somewhere on Google Plus.
Yeah, they'll eventually figure out what to do with that thing. I mean, I'm on it as well, but yeah, it feels like it goes down right now, and I'm just waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I just, the problem is there's Facebook and there's Twitter and there's Google Plus, and it's like, how much time can you spend on any of them? Mm-hmm. And I'll check, you know, Google Plus, you know, once or twice a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of like that there's not a lot of stuff on it, because then I don't feel like I miss too much. But Twitter, man, it's just boom, 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 boom. Anything other than a message sent directly to me, mm-hmm. is hard to sort of keep track of if I'm not right at the computer. Mm-hmm.
And of course, okay, Twitter is the best place to go. And of course, Marvel.com, see all the stuff that you help put together. And, you know, be on the lookout, like I said, sometime this week, because there's that big It Begins thing coming up. It's coming, rather.
It's coming, it's, yeah, coming. Yeah.
I'm confusing because, like, there's, if you watch pro wrestling, they're doing an It Begins type of thing right now. Like,
I've heard about that, but I don't watch regular wrestling regularly, so I just talked to Ben Morris and Jim Viscardi and Arun Singh at Marvel about whatever's going on at wrestling. And I think last week I saw someone in like a white shirt, and I thought it was Gangrel, and I was like, oh man, what's Gangrel up to? I ended up watching like 20 minutes of videos of you know, various 90s wrestling. It's like a horrible YouTube black hole of wrestling.
Man, don't get me started on that stuff, man. I mean, especially since I started doing the wrestling, a wrestling podcast, it's just been insane. I've been trying to get into more of the indie stuff and all this other stuff. It's wrestling's very interesting right now. I'll say that much.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think we tweeted about it. The new wrestling game, WWE 12, is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And it's always fun to come up with storylines, and and then putting Michael Cole in situations where he gets hit by a car is always fun too.
I'm sure he appreciates that.
Yeah, well, his character is really irritating. I know he's playing a character, but man, you just want to do that sometimes. And of course, to close out the show, final question I had is, where in the world have you had the best taco?
Where have I had the best taco?
It has to be San Diego. Whatever.
I haven't been able – the problem with anything in San Diego that is awesome is I never have a chance to go. I don't get in early enough to like – the iFanboy guys always go to like Hodad's and get – burgers, and other people stay later. It's like I land and I have appointments and I start prepping for the show. I'd never have a time to go and get great tacos. Some fish tacos are good, but I don't have those tacos that like blow my mind.
Next year, if you have extra time, let me know and I'll hook you up, take you around or something. Okay. I know some good places around here.
Cool. I've had a lot of great tacos in various places. Nothing that stands up and goes, this is the best taco you've ever eaten, because I don't think I've had it yet. I haven't hit the apex of taco.
Well, that's a good answer. Once again, Ryan, thank you so much for doing the show. I really appreciate it. And a lot of people, I've always been curious about what you do for Marvel. And like I said, I'm kind of envious because you have probably one of the coolest jobs in the world right now. So,
thank you for having me on. I'm just glad I can share my love for Marvel and fun geeky stuff with everyone else.
Yeah, man. I mean, hopefully we'll have you on again, and we'll talk about. I kind of want to expand more on the journalism thing that you brought up earlier. I think it'd be fun to kind of talk about that at length one of these days. But when your schedule's not ridiculously busy like it is right now. It's funny though. Even in the off season, you guys are super busy. Off season from the conventions, I mean. So, man, yeah, keep up the great work, and thanks for all the cool stuff you guys have been doing.
Thanks so much, Pat. I appreciate it.
All right, sir. And of course, if you want to find me online, just hit me up on my about.me page, about.me/PatLoika. And of course, follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/PatLoika. And you can find our sponsors, our good friends at cheapgraphicnovels.com, where you can get your favorite Marvel books for up to 45% off cover price. You can't go wrong with the deals there. So don't forget cheapgraphicnovels.com. Once again, thank you all for listening, and thank you for all the support in the last year. This is the last interview show I have. Next couple episodes will be roundtable discussions about the comics and the news of the last year. Next year, I promise to have some more fun interviews. I have some cool people lined up. Like, January is packed with some good stuff. We got Carmen Andrzejewski, Declan Shalvey, Clayton Cowles, and there's so much more. It's going to be a fun year next year, so I look forward to sharing some of the insights that we gain from these professionals. And you guys be good, and of course, please leave us an iTunes review, because it'd be greatly appreciated. And thank you so much, and we will be back next week with more fun stuff. So take it easy, and once again, never ever be ashamed for liking the things you like, because goddammit, you like it. You should be entitled to enjoy it. So take it easy.
All religions.
Oh, I think we're offending Rosemary.
No, you're not religious.
my dear, are you?
But I was brought up a Catholic. Now I don't know. You look so comfortable. Well, he is the Pope.
Well, now, you don't need to have respect for him because he pretends that he's holy. Now, that's a good point.
Views and opinions expressed by the guests and those providing comments are theirs alone and do not necessarily reflect the views of Pat Loika. You can reach Pat by sending an email to loikamania@gmail.com. This has been a Dial R Studios production.